You're listening to the Eyes on Isles podcast with Matt O'Leary and Mitch Anderson.
Hello and welcome to the Eyes on Isles podcast, episode number 30. I am Matt O'Leary. I am joined by Mitch Anderson. And Mitch, as always, what edition is this?
Well, it's number 30, and we've done some research. And it's Gar Snow, Chad Johnson, Michael Neuwirth, J.F. Berube. It's essentially
noticing a trend.
Yeah, it's all goalies. It's all goalies. Anyone who's ever worn number 30 for the Islanders is a goalie. And I think that's not like, oh my God, or was a goalie. Like, it's not some sort of crazy conspiracy. It's just, it seems that in the NHL, goalies like to wear number 30. Or 31 nowadays, but you can't do that with the Islanders because Billy Smith's number's retired. So foreshadowing to next week, I got my number ready.
There you go. You came prepared. You brought a lot to the table today. That was an interesting tidbit. I think fans are going to like that.
Yeah, that's all I got. Thanks for watching. Bye.
All right. That's been the Eyes on Isles podcast. Thanks for tuning in. All right. Anyway.
That's a bad bit.
We're lame. We're really lame.
Yep.
But anyway, let's get started. Usually we talk about the Islanders' last three games to start, but they've only played two games. One shootout loss and one win. Mitch, what are your biggest takeaways from these two games?
I think it's just that they haven't been able to stick to this defensive system that they put in place. Right? Their last game, they gave up 50 shots or more. How many shots did they give up? Was it 52, I think? And Gibson made...
No, 50. Oh, 50, yeah, he made 50 saves, so yeah.
So 52 shots against the Calgary Flames, which are, to be fair, is a good team. But it just seems that maybe that defensive system that Doug Weight put in place isn't necessarily working. Which is fine if they're going to win in a way. I'd like for them to do both. But at this point, with this staff, with this roster, they don't seem to be able to win a game where 25 shots are thrown against them. For some reason, they need at least double shots thrown against them for them to win. That's my biggest takeaway.
I think I would notice that too. The inconsistency there, because for a long stretch, it seemed like they're going back to giving up like 25 shots a night. And you're like, yes, I love this. Give me this all the time. But they're still losing. And then the irony of it all is they start giving up 50 shots again, and then they actually win the game.
Yeah. The last time that they gave up 50 shots or more in those... Since Doug Weight has put that strategy in place, they've won, haven't they? I'm going to say they have, but I'm saying that with nothing to back that up right now. So I'm talking on my back end. Van for me while I look that up.
Okay. To me, something that sticks out, especially from the last few, the Tavares hate is still here, which confused me. I don't want to completely change the topic, but this is something that is another standout to me. And I know Kate put something up on the site, so that's why we wanted to talk a little bit about it on the show. But I'm with her. I don't think that Tavares really deserves the blame that he's getting from a lot of fans on the internet.
So the last time... So Doug Weight instilled the strategy apparently after February 13th. I'm just coming back real quick to close this off. They had their next game was two days later against the Rangers, where the Islanders led up another 50 shots against. They won that. In the meantime, they've played Pittsburgh on March 3rd, led up 50 shots against and lost in overtime, and then they won again, 52 shots against in Calgary. So they're 2-0-1 when they led up 50 shots or more since Doug Weight instilled that new strategy.
Okay, that makes zero sense. I don't get that at all.
They're 4-4 when they let up less than 50 shots against. So since he instilled that new strategy, so make that what you will.
Mitch, nothing makes sense anymore. You would think that we give up less shots and they score less goals, and we win because they score less goals. But apparently that's not how it works anymore, Mitch.
Nope. Throw whatever you think you know out the window. Bye-bye. So on to Tavares. People are saying Tavares isn't carrying his weight, so on and so forth. Or he didn't for a while, I guess, because he went through a slump. Like anyone is entitled to do. Not entitled, but it can happen to anyone. No matter if your name is Sidney Crosby or Wayne Gretzky, you're going to go through a slump of a few games. That happens. Why is all of a sudden that we turn against him? I guess the idea that they're not winning doesn't help, I suppose.
Yeah, I definitely think that has something to do with it. And I think another part is the insecurity of John Tavares' future with the organization. I think that plays a big role, too.
So are people just getting mad ahead of time, thinking, like, I'm going to get mad now so it makes it easier for me to deal with later?
Yeah, I think it's like a subconscious thing where it's like, oh, I'm just going to start getting mad and say, oh, we'll be better off without him anyway, so that to lessen the blow.
Can we freeze on that for 1 second? How are we going to be better off without John Tavares?
We wouldn't.
I don't understand the banality of the statement. I understand people say, well, we have Matthew Barzal. That's true. We do. But if you look at this league and you look at the Stanley Cup winners over the last X number of years, how many of them have a single superstar player on the roster? Pittsburgh Penguins? They got two. Chicago Blackhawks? They got two. The Los Angeles Kings? They got two. Anze Kopitar, Drew Doughty, you know, borderline Jonathan Quick. I wouldn't necessarily call him a superstar, but he's up there. And those are, how many cups do they have between the two of them? Two, three, that's six. They have eight cups in the last, like, 10 years. Boston Bruins, there's another one. Patrice Bergeron and Zdeno Chara. And Tim Thomas on top of that in his superstar year. Like, you need more than just one superstar to win. So if we get rid of Tavares, and sure enough, we have Barzal, great. We have no one else behind him, which was the entire problem we had when we had Tavares alone to begin with.
You idiots. You're those same people who are yelling at Garth Snow to do something because Tavares is alone, and they're saying, oh, we got Barzal. We could get rid of Tavares now. It doesn't make any sense,
no,
Mitch.
It doesn't. It's so stupid. It's so asinine. I just... And if your statement is like, well, he doesn't want to be here, okay, well, you know what? I can't. Fine. You think he doesn't want to be here? Okay, cool. I don't think you're right, but, like, you know, at this point he hasn't signed, so I don't know. But, like, I don't know. He's also got, like, 5 points in the last 5 games. So can we just cool our jets here a second?
He does. He has 5 points in the last 4 games, if you want to make it sound even nicer.
That's true. He's even better. And he's got 69 in 69 games. Nice, but, you know.
I was going to say that. You beat me too.
So he's still a point per game player over the season. He's still going to hit maybe 82 points, maybe more. When's the last time John Tavares hit 80 points? 14-50.
Yeah.
It'll have been 3 years since he hit more than 80 points. And even then, he hasn't done that for... That'll be the third time in his career he hits 80 points at the pace he's on right now. He's having a great year. A great year. God. Yes, they're not winning. It's a systematic thing. The entire system around him, they shouldn't be losing when they have a Calder-winning trophy player. He's going to win the Calder. And 240 goal scorers on the team. They shouldn't be losing. They shouldn't be this bad, yet they are, because there's another, what is it? There's three players I just named. There's another 20 players on this roster that aren't holding up their weight. Maybe even less than that. Let's say 18 if we take out Josh Letty. Bailey. Not even. Josh Bailey and Jordan Eberle.
Ooh.
You take those guys out of the equation, and we're left with, that's four players I named out of 23. So that's 19. Who am I missing? I named, Anders Lee. Sorry, 18. 18 players aren't holding up their weight this season.
18 out of 23, that's not a good ratio.
That is not a good ratio. That's so bad.
We're back to being a math podcast again.
That's so bad. So, like, if you want to blame Tavares for where they're in, you don't like his leadership, okay, fine, I guess I'm never going to convince you otherwise, but that's not the case. That's not what's happening here. And if you're just trying to blame Tavares so that it makes it easier on you at the end of the year, then I'm sorry for you.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. He's on pace to have a career high in goals and be over 80 points, but let's just yell at John Tavares because that's all we can do now. Yeah. Oh, this is so frustrating.
I know. Do we want to move to something maybe a little bit more uplifting?
Okay.
So Chris Gibson has been pretty darn good.
Yeah, he's been very good, actually. In three games, he has a .957 save percentage and a 1.90 goals against average.
With that kind of goaltending averaged out over the year, if that's what it was, the Islanders would be at the top of the Metropolitan Division right now.
I think that's a little unfair to ask of Chris Gibson.
Incredibly unfair.
Wild assumption.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Maybe he could be that. I'm not going to say he will because of three games, but at this point, I'm happy someone's at least able to do it, especially right now. Because as you look at it, they have a new defensive system, or so we think, or so we've been told, sorry. And their roster isn't that great. But he's still able to do it. And listen, Halak isn't. In the month of March, Halak has a 4.5 goals against average and an .809 save percentage.
Ooh.
Awful. La poop. He's been terrible in March. But he's got the same defensive system in front of him. He's got the same players around him. And he's only played twice in March. But that's a pretty good comparison when you're looking at Chris Gibson's sample size. That's only three. You're looking at a three-game sample size to a two-game sample size. They're not big either or. But when you compare them and you compare the system and the context that they're in the same boat. But one is dramatically better than the other one.
So then let me ask you this. Chris Gibson has to play almost every single night. That's not a back-to-back, correct?
I would,
the rest of the way?
I would do it. Why not? Like, what have you got to lose? And it's not like he's played bad teams. Okay, Edmonton hasn't been good. But I think they went on a little roll there after they played the Islanders where they won three or four in a row. Well, actually, they would have one of them would have been the Islanders because the Islanders haven't been winning. So they've been able to put games together, and like they're still playing against McDavid. Then they played.
He single-handedly won that game anyway.
That goal was such garbage. Behind the net and everything. God. Gotta hate McDavid.
Yeah, it went off Davidson's stick. And then off Gibson's back and in. Yeah. That was such a fluky goal.
Awful. With like a minute 50 left. A minute 50.
Yeah. And then poor Gibson had no shot in the shootout.
No, it's a shootout. It's 50-50 against the best player in the world. Like, come on. But anyways. So he played Pittsburgh, which is a fantastic team, especially at the time. He played Edmonton. And where did he get the win again? Why can't I remember this for some reason?
Calgary.
Okay, they're not great. So, but they still put 52 shots up against him.
Yeah, he's up 50 of 52. That's pretty damn good.
So, it's time to get a little crazy. Not super crazy like it was at the beginning of this, but a little crazy. Do you think he's got a chance at the starting position next year? And by say a chance, I mean, is he going to get at least a consideration? I'm not saying, do you see him as a starter? I'm asking, when the Islanders are down a goalie, at the start of the 18-19 season because of contracts, and they're looking to fill at the starter position, is he going to at least have like a picture up on the board?
Yeah, I think so. I think that he should go into camp and get an opportunity at least. Again, I don't think that they should necessarily plan on just having Greiss and Gibson be the goalies and be okay with that, but I do believe that he deserves an opportunity to at least prove it.
Yeah. I, at this point, based off of what he's done, I can't say otherwise. I can say, like, yes, he's got a small sample size, but I like what he's shown so far. And yes, it's only a small sample size, but, like, that's all we got to go on so far. We can wait longer, but the Islanders' contracts aren't getting sorted out sooner. And who are they going to go pick up in free agency? Who are they going to go pick up in trades? That's a goalie. Like, the one goalie that probably could have moved and had any sort of potential was Peter Mrazek. Who else are they going to go pick up?
I have a few names.
Okay. Who you got?
Oh, you want me to actually do it?
Yeah, go who you got.
Okay, you have two options from the same team. One trade, one free agency.
Oh, okay.
Antti Raanta?
Right.
Or Darcy Kemper?
Right. And who's your third one?
I said two guys from the
Oh, I thought, for some reason, I thought you had three guys. I think I was projecting Dyslexia. Robin Leonard in your list for some reason.
Oh, okay.
Okay, we'll get to those two guys a little bit later in our longer segment, because I think you wrote something about Darcy Kemper in some sort of list. But why those two guys? Because, like, Arizona is garbage.
Yeah, so why would those guys want to stay there?
Okay, I guess. Are they up? Are they up for... Are their contracts up, or...?
Ronta's a UFA, and you could have to trade for Darcy Kemper.
Okay.
He just signed a two-year extension.
Okay.
At under $2 million a year.
Oh, that is tasty.
Exactly.
Do you know what his average is? Like, what kind of numbers he's putting up?
Give me 2 seconds, I could tell you what his numbers
are. Yeah, because the only thing I worry about that is kind of like the Scott Darling thing, right? It's like we've seen a decent sample size, an okay sample size, and he put up some okay numbers, but the second you give him the reins... And I guess that goes for any goalie, so like I guess it's not fair for me to say that would happen with Kemper.
Okay. Ready? Yeah. He is 12-3-4 with a .927 save percentage and .222 goals against average.
That's pretty darn good.
And 27 years old.
Yeah. And what's his record?
12-3-4.
Oh, that's a pretty good sample size too. 3-12-4. Yeah, I could dig that for sure. But they obviously think the same. That's why they gave him the 2-year deal.
Right, but they also, I really think that they want Ronta back.
Really? Okay.
I think so. I think they want to give Ronta an extension. And I think that's why Kemper is then expendable, especially if you give him a draft pick, which the Islanders have.
They've got
loads of.
A few of those.
Yeah, and I don't know many rebuilding teams that will shy away from a draft pick for a backup goalie that's expendable.
That's true. So
just dropping some knowledge bombs here, Mitch. That's all I'm doing.
Mind blown.
John Ledecky, I know if you're listening, if there's a GM position available at the end of the year, you know I'm your man. I got those ideas.
There you go. Well, you've got a whole list, and we'll get to your list a little bit later. So on Gibson himself specifically, you say he gets a picture up on the wall to say, do we give this guy a shot, yay or nay, at the starter position? I totally agree.
Oh, absolutely. I really do. I think that it's going to be him, Grice, and at the very least, Soderstrom, next year in camp. Getting a lot.
Yeah, I can't disagree unless they go pick some up like Kemper, and then, you know, that makes sense. Gudlevskis, forget about it. Like, he's going to be the AHL guy for a while now, which is fine. You know, he seems perfectly serviceable at that level, I think. I say that because I haven't necessarily looked it up, but from what I understand, he's okay. Ultimately, I don't see Christopher Gibson getting it, but I can see a scenario where he gets a backup position. So they give it to Grice full-time. They keep Gibson as the backup, and then Soderstrom is left to kind of acclimatize himself to the American game. Maybe the American, the North American game. And playing the AHL for the season.
Playing the AHL. And would you be okay with that?
Yeah, because I don't know what Soderstrom is. Right, he's an unknown quantity at the NHL level. And this is where my argument for giving Gibson a shot is entirely based on, is that we've seen what he can do at the NHL level. I know it's only on 3 games, but that's 3 more games than we've seen from Linus Soderstrom. So we see what he can do at the NHL level, which is the level that matters. So to me, that makes more sense.
Oof. I'm not sure I fully agree with you there. I don't think it's too big. You're talking like we know what he is based off 3 games.
Well,
I mean, pump the brakes.
Okay, but do you know what Linus Soderstrom is off 0 games?
No, I don't think you know what either of them truly
are. But you know more. You started forming. Like, if you were playing Command and Conquer Red Alert and you were moving up towards the base, you've gotten 3 steps closer. So you've revealed more of the map with Christopher Gibson than you have with Linus Soderstrom. He's still being made through in the bunkers right now. No one played that game? No one?
What the hell are you talking about?
You've never played Command & Conquer Red Alert? What world are you from? Oh, okay. Have you played any any game where, like, a real-time strategy game where you have to reveal the map as you progress through it. You played StarCraft Warcraft or any game like that.
Dude, Command & Conquer came out in 96. I was one.
What? Oh. Well, I'm going to be sick.
You're so washed
up.
Oh,
man. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, sorry.
That made you feel
good.
Wait,
Command & Conquer or Command & Conquer Red Alert?
Red Alert. Red Alert came out in 96. God,
you have to play that game. If no one's played that game, play it now. It's fantastic. It's absolutely amazing. Tesla coils and everything. Anyway, so the point of the game is that your two warring factions, the Allies and the Soviets, I don't know if they actually call them the Soviets. I'm pretty sure they do. They got a Stalin-looking guy in there. Anyways, and as you converge towards each other's, like, as you start the game, you see where you are, and you see nothing else. It's all black. And you have to walk your guys around to reveal more of the map. And so with...
Okay.
If we're using the goalie metaphor here, we've taken three steps closer to the enemy's base, or towards knowing a complete picture of what's happening in the world, with Christopher Gibson than we have with Linus Soderstrom.
Okay. All right, the analogy...
It works, trust me. It works. It just took me forever to get there because you're like 15 years old.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you haven't like hashtag YOLO'd everywhere. I assume that's hashtag... what like millennials do.
Yeah, pretty much. That's, yeah, I fit in that role, definitely.
Yeah, although, is that why you love How I Met Your Mother? Is that why? Because you're a millennial?
Oh my God, are we doing this on this
platform?
We're
going to do it right now. Because you had like the worst hot take ever. My wife almost threw up hearing that hot take.
Oh my God. You told your wife?
I tell my wife everything.
Oh my God.
We're partners in life.
Okay. My hot take was I love the ending to How I Met Your Mother. And the reason why is because especially this was the second time I watched it.
That's the important part. That's the important part. You saw it twice all the way through. Go on.
Right, because the whole show basically foreshadows it happening. It throws you a nice spin at the end.
There's nothing nice about that spin. There's nothing nice about it.
No, because you're waiting for them to get together the entire show.
And then they do.
And then they do.
But then you're like, I'm kind of done with this because you had like three seasons where I was like, oh, I'm over this now.
No.
Anyway, we won't reveal the ending. But the people who have watched How I Met Your Mother know that it's a disgusting ending and it ruined everyone's lives. And Matt O'Leary loves it. So he's okay with you being...
I do.
Your life's ruined. I almost ruined that joke.
Was it because it made you sad at the end?
No, it didn't make me sad. It made me upset that I spent that kind of time watching it and it wasn't justly rewarded with a proper finishing.
That was such a great... That was a good show. You're such a fool.
Oh, God.
Go play your Red Storm or whatever the hell it's called.
Red Alert, get it right.
Oh, God. All right, let's talk about another thing we're going to definitely disagree on. Okay, President of Hockey Operations, speaking of hot take, Mitch dropped a hot take on us with who he would like the President of Hockey Ops to be. Mitch, you have the floor.
Garth Snow.
Okay, now if everyone will join me, we're going to give Mitch a boo on the count of three. So if you're listening in your car, wherever you're listening, on three, just start booing. Ready? One, two, three. Boo! Why? Why do you want this guy anywhere near the organization, Mitch? We've talked about this every week. It's his fault we're in this situation to begin with.
Are you done?
Yeah, I justify this.
Okay. So, the justification for this is that clearly the Islanders... So, this all came about because... And this isn't a new take. We've talked about this specifically in the summer, even. Because the Islanders have been looking for President of Hockey Operations for some time now. And just this week, the Carolina Hurricanes, quote-unquote, fired Ron Francis, living Carolina Hurricanes legend, Ron Francis, as the general manager, and placed him... So they didn't fire him, actually, but they removed him from his GM role and made him president of hockey operations. And the owner, Jeff Dundon, is it Jeff? I think it's Tom Dundon. Either way, I know it's Dundon at the end. Either way, his justification was that we wanted a guy for a hockey ops position and we wanted a guy for a GM position because at this point in our franchise anyways, the Carolina franchise, he did both. Just like Gar Snow does. He does both. We want someone to do one independently. Now, to be fair, Dundon also didn't necessarily agree with Francis and just wanted him out, but he didn't want to have to buy out his contract. So what he's doing is he's putting him somewhere where he doesn't have to buy him out. He's got to pay out the rest of his contract, but he's going to have no impact on the day-to-day roster. Now,
let me ask you, what does the president of hockey operations actually
do? Who the hell knows? Who knows? Who cares? He's not making trades or making draft picks. And that's all that matters. He's getting paid. He's still in the organization. He still has a vote, I'm sure, or a say, or an opinion. But it doesn't mean that you got to listen to him.
Do I picture the president of hockey operations doing?
George Costanza, like sleeping in the desk, just like, yes.
Wait, he brings an empty briefcase and just like, he just waddles into his office, sits there at his empty desk, opens the briefcase, there's like a sandwich in there.
What does he do like Peter Griffin when he got to the position? He just sharpens pencils all day?
Yeah.
So my thought here was that the Islanders are in a situation with Gar Snow is that we clearly don't want him there for good reason. But it also seems that this guy's got a contract for the next billion years, if you want to believe some media types like Dave Lozo. And I have no reason to not believe him. It's very much in Charles Wong's MO to give ridiculously long contracts. See Rick DiPietro and Alexei Yashin. I don't doubt that he's done this. But if the Islanders brass, if their reason for not firing Gar Snow right now is simply because his contract is way too big, put him into hockey ops. Do it. You have the power. Put him there. Hire someone, whoever, that you see fit, that would be a better fit as a general manager. And wait out the contract, or until Seattle comes up and they're saying, "Hey, we want someone who's been there forever," and they come pluck Gar Snow from your team, and then you're done with him. You didn't have to pay anything out aside from his regular contract, and he had no impact on the team. Win. You're welcome.
Okay, here's what I do.
Yeah.
I don't give him the satisfaction of staying with the organization. You kick his ass to the curb, say sayonara, see you later, bye-bye, hand him whatever's remaining on that contract, and be done with this clown.
I know. But honestly, at what point do you think the organization's going to actually do that? That's why I wrote this, because I'm at a position where there's no way that I can see Gar Snow leaving. I can't see him leaving. It's possible, but I don't see it, and they've done nothing to prove to tell me otherwise. So why would I believe it now?
After missing the playoffs 2 years in a row?
Sure, maybe, but they're going to miss it now. What are they waiting for, the mathematics to work out? They've got how many games left? 12? No. 12 to make up 8 points, please.
Whenever the day after their season's over.
That's fine. Fine. If they do it then, fine. But we're not there yet. And I thought that they was apt, especially considering that Carolina had just done that. And they're in the playoff race. They're in the race for the playoffs right now. The Islanders are not.
In football, they have what's called Black Monday. And it's the day after the regular season ends. So the last Sunday, week 17 of the NFL, the following day is called Black Monday. And all the bad coaches get let go. The GMs get let go. And whenever the following day is, I don't know what day of the week the Islanders season ends on, but black whatever is when Gar Snow is going to get the boot the very next day.
Okay, so should we, let me pull up the date here and let's schedule something. We already have, so what's the bet that we already have going on that if Gar Snow is in that position or in a position on opening day or on the first day?
No, this is GM, not any position. Oh, if he's the GM.
You lucky duck. Okay, sure. If he's still GM by the time they play at the Coliseum, you will stand outside of the Coliseum with a cowbell and a sandwich board and he will scream out shame. So that's still going. Now you're saying their last game of the season is on a Saturday.
It's on a Saturday, Black Sunday, there baby. You go.
So Sunday, Bloody Sunday, April 8th.
April 8th. That sounds like a good day.
So
or Ledecky, if you're listening, if you want to wait till April 21st and give me a good birthday present. You could do that also.
So I'm just opening my calendar here. April 8th. I have to cut my dog's nails. I'm going to also add something here. Is Garth still employed? Question mark. If not.
Okay.
Wait. Then what? What are you going to do if he doesn't? If he isn't? I say he's still going to be there.
Okay, so...
Wait, no, I'm not going to double down on these. We'll just keep that, and if... I don't know what we're going to do. We'll think about it. We'll think about doing something for April 8th. Some sort of social media campaign or awareness session, if he's still in the position or not.
All right. Whatever tickles your fancy, just tell me. I'll do it on video, whatever.
Yeah, we'll
you
come
want.
Up with something together as a team for April 8th. So put that in your calendars, everyone.
Okay. Anything else on your boy for Hockey Ops, president of Hockey Ops?
No, I want him gone. I really do. We all want him gone, but like I think this is the more manageable way of doing so based off of the reality that we live in.
All right. This is depressing.
It could be, but it could be very uplifting if I'm incredibly wrong and they just tomorrow they're like, you know what? We're done with him. If he loses tomorrow, or if they lose tomorrow and they fire him, it'd be the happiest day of my life.
I hope your wife doesn't listen to the show.
I just told her we're partners in life. She knows what I'm talking about. She knows that I'm being boisterous when it comes to sports.
Oh my god! He said,
my wife or my two children.
Oh my god! We're gonna play that at your kid's 18th birthday. Exactly. Oh, God. All right. I want to get into the long topic. All right. So I came up with a 10-step plan to fix the Islanders. If you missed it, it is still on the website, eyesonisles.com. And
just honestly, just Google Islanders 10 step and it'll come up first thing.
Okay. I don't know. Where do you want to start with this? Do you want me to talk about why I did this or do you want to ask questions?
Okay. Like, let's start with about it. Why you did it. And then I'm going to tell you. I'm going to ask you what your favorite one is. And by favorite, you can define what your favorite is by whatever criteria you want, like realistic, reasonable, doable, whatever you want. And I'll give you my two faves. And then there's one that I want to ask you some questions on. So tell us why you did it.
I did it because the Islanders need a major facelift.
No.
They need to end this culture of losing.
They need to end Dan Sarracini? Matt. That is.
I like.
Are fighting
I know. I like him. I like what he does over at Lighthouse. I mean, they have to. The Islanders actually. That's why he made his handle "Culture of Losing." It's because the Islanders have this culture.
The way you said it, I was. Just
I see what you're trying to do here, the instigator. They have this stench, this bile all over them, and it has to be cleaned. And they need a major facelift. And I thought, if I was in charge, what would I do? And I came up with 10 steps to fix this team.
Okay, perfect. What is your favorite of the 10?
My favorite of the 10.
Now again, you can say your favorite is, for whatever reason, is it realistic? Is it reasonable? Is it actually actionable, like something that could be done? What is it?
My favorite, and it's because I got a little bit creative with it, is my trade for Darcy Kemper.
Okay. You've mentioned that. So what do you give up for Darcy Kemper in your trade scenario?
Okay. A 2018 second round pick and Andrew Ladd, who waives his no trade clause. And the Islanders retained $12 million of that salary because that's the most amount that they could retain.
Right.
That the CBA allows.
Okay. That's fair. I don't imagine he waves it to go to Arizona. But who knows? Right? Like it's possible. And Arizona's going to need him because I think is Pronger's already off the books and I think comes off this year, and that's $6 million off the books.
Yeah, they're going to try to reach that cap floor. They could use a veteran to be in their top six. Andrew Ladd at $3.1 million sounds a lot nicer than Andrew Ladd at $5.5 million.
Yeah, that's less than Casey Zizekas or Kyle Clutterbuck. And he's definitely got a bigger production upside than both of them.
Yeah, he has potential. I think he can help mentor some of their younger players.
Definitely. So as long as he's willing to waive that no trade clause or no move clause, then we're all good. But I just don't see it happening.
Hey, man, I would say, listen, it would be a healthy scratch every single night here for the next five
That's
years.
That's true. Yeah, they just Marc-Andre Fleury him saying, like, where you're not going to play. So do you want to go somewhere you're going to play or do you want to stay here? Think about it. Yeah, I like it. Yeah. Okay. I'll give you my fave. I have two. Okay. The first one is that you made a trade for, or maybe not a trade, but you said bring in Tyler Bozak. Was it a trade? I forget now.
No, UFA.
Yeah. I love that. Bring him in as your third line center. Heck yeah. He's a third line center in Toronto right now.
Right.
He might even be borderline fourth line center with Thomas Plekanec being there. So I like that. He's going to be UFA. How much do you give him?
I give him 3 years, $14.25 million, so $4.75 million.
Okay, that's a lot for a third line center. It really is, but for 3 years, you still got Matt Barzal for 2 years at less than $1 million. So,
and the reason why I made it a short term 3 year deal is because his line mates would be Kiefer Bellows and Josh Hosang, who will make virtually nothing for the almost the entire length of that contract.
Oh, that sounds good. I like that already. Well, I liked it before. That's why I said it was my fave. And then there's the other one where you said Justin Falk for Sebastian Aho, Brock Nelson, and a first-round pick in 2018. And I wrote here, I love it. Because I do.
Yes.
Although, would they put both Sebastian Ahos on the same team?
It might get confusing.
Could you imagine,
but,
like, the jerseys that's going on there? What Sebastian Aho do you have? They'd have to put, like, a Finnish emoji icon next to one and a Swedish one against the other one.
Well, I think Sebastian Aho has some upside, and the Islanders have some defensive prospects to play with. That's why I included him. Brock Nelson, again, it's not so much an immediate impact for 2018-2019, but they have a bunch of guys coming off the books the following year where he could slot in as that third line center. I mean, next in 2018-19, he could probably be like a third line left wing or something like that.
Yeah.
Which I think he probably plays better at wing anyway, but that's a whole story for another day. And then a first round pick. I mean, I think I quoted it in here too. I don't know a lot of teams that haven't made the playoffs in nearly a decade give up the opportunity of acquiring a first round pick.
Right, exactly. On the Brock front, like, their highest goal scorer is Toivo Teravainen, has 21 goals. So they could probably use someone like Brock, who, yes, he goes quiet for a while, but he still gets you 20 goals, most likely. So you got yourself another 20-goal scorer on the team. That's pretty good for a team that's short on goals.
Right, and they could take a flyer on him again for being someone who just needs a change of scenery. And I gave – it was a sign-and-trade, so I gave him a four-year, $16 million contract. So $4 million AAV.
Okay. So like a $1.5 million raise every year?
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot, but it's probably fair in today's market, I think. Who knows? No one knows what market worths are like anyways. And just getting Justin Falk in. So you would put him, I think I saw that you put him in the on the second defensive pairing. Kind of like a Ryan McDonough slot in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I would put him in that second spot and start Davidson with him for next year. And then hopefully Taze can move into that spot either at some point during the year or the following
year. Yeah, we forget we still have Taze because he's injured, but we still have him coming up next year. And he's likely going to challenge for a roster spot next year. I just don't know where he's going to fit in. We're going to have to get rid of one of our defensemen, so that's why Sebastian Aho obviously leaves. But like one of Pollock, Mayfield, Pelech, Aho have to make room for Taze unless we get rid of Taze, and then it's, well, what's the point?
Right.
After all that build-up, we're just going to trade him? Come on, that doesn't make any sense.
No, that's why I think like Aho's the more expendable.
Yeah, that's fair. And then I had a question for you. You had...
Okay.
At one point you said fire Garceau. So my question is why? No. No. Everyone had a panic attack there. No, it's... You said fire him and replace him with Bill Guerin. Now, make your case for Bill Guerin. Why Billy G? Aside from the fact that he used to play here.
That's one of the reasons. But then also because he has been with a winning organization for since 2011.
What organization is that again?
The Pittsburgh Never Penguins. Oh, okay. He has seen how good teams are built. I quoted how, because I really enjoy how they you spend money on their forwards, especially. Mm. Only Malkin, Crosby, and Kessel make money. Everyone else, they don't pay anyone big money that they don't have to. They're very smart with their contracts. And it also kind of ties into who I'd want as the coach too.
Okay, who do you want?
Because he has a connection.
Oh, right. Yeah, I act like I didn't read it, but I actually read it.
So
Dan Bylsma.
Yeah.
I did not like him in Buffalo, and I'll be the first to accuse myself of recency bias, but he did not do a good job in Buffalo.
Did Buffalo have any players, though?
Jack Eichel? Jack Eichel?
That's it.
This kid, this American kid, second overall. Jack Eichel?
Right. Okay, can I give you some statistics that might sway you? Okay.
You didn't even have them ready. How are you going to get? You're your argument. I don't know.
He had a 668 win percentage with Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And his team never finished below second place when he was with the Penguins.
Second place in the division?
Okay. Yes.
All right. Cool.
That doesn't do it for him?
It's Pittsburgh. At this point, I assume anyone can come in and do an okay job.
But the Islanders have never brought in a coach that has had playoff success.
You're right. That's true. If that's what it is, and it's changing the culture in terms of hiring and who they're bringing in and saying, like, we have big team mentality, fine. Okay, I'll give you that much because you're right. They usually bring in some AHL coach, a guy that has no experience, a guy who's going to be cheap on the payroll.
Mitch, the guy who had the most success as a head coach before being brought here was Mike Milbury.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Well,
wait, what do you mean? Sorry, redefine that. What do you mean exactly before being brought here?
Mike Milbury, with his one conference championship appearance in 1989-1990, was the deepest playoff run a coach has had before joining the Islanders.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. That's food for thought. But to me, it's just that the Islanders hire usually for a bench boss unproven talent. At least recently. I'm not going to say that Al Arbor was unproven before they got him. But as of lately, in the modern era, the Islanders don't hire someone who's got a proven track record because they usually go for someone who's cheaper on the payroll. They're nowhere near the race for like when Barry Trotz was out there, and even then Barry Trotz probably wouldn't have given them the time of day, or Bruce Boudreau, same thing, wouldn't have given them the time of day probably. But if they can get someone like Bylsma who's got that experience, sure, okay, fine. As long as they bill it as we now have big team mentality, and like that's kind of thrown into like the glorifying stats of him being with Pittsburgh, then I'm okay with it. Then you've sold me on that. But outside of it, you have not sold me.
All right. That's fine. You're not going to agree with everything.
That's true. But I kind of did agree with you, though, because you made that argument.
But did you like my lineup, though? Would you have done anything differently? How about that? Would you have done anything differently in your plan?
In my plan? So when it comes to lineup, my plan is there's a lot of assumptions. I don't get rid of Andrew Ladd mainly because I don't think he can go. I like the idea of trying to convince him to go by not playing him, but... Oh, that's tough to do with $5.5 million just sitting there. My defense might look a little bit different because I'd try to get rid of Scott Mayfield and Adam Pellick. I try to package them with first round picks for. Oh God, I know what you're clapping, but it's not because of that.
You're the same guy who just loved these signings. Yeah. We talked about it last week.
But did I say I'm getting rid of them because of their contracts, or did I say I'm getting rid of them because they're extra guys and we have better players on the roster already?
Oh, like, look, my
the
God.
The contracts themselves are fine. The contracts in and of themselves are good. The contracts in and of themselves are cost assertive. They assure the cost over the length of the contract, and they're not big deals. They're, what, 1.6 for Pellick and 1.25, I think it is, for Mayfield? Like, these aren't big money deals. We're not talking Cal Clutterbuck or Casey Zizekas. They are good deals for the price point. Now, if I'm getting rid of them, it's because I'm trying to bring in other guys. I like Aho. I like Pollock. I like Taze. I like them better than I like Mayfield and I like Pellick. But I also need top four help because one of those guys is going to the top four and the other two guys are going to the bottom six or the bottom two. So who am I going to bring in? Well, lately in the NHL, the trend is to bring in a guy like a McDonough, like a Justin Falk. Okay, well then I need to move some D to get that. I think I made a pretty darn compelling case for both sides of that. You're welcome.
Oh my God. That was great.
It's not a hypocritical stance. It's acknowledging a contract when a contract is good and acknowledging when you have something that could be traded for more.
Do you think a 5-year contract is movable, though?
On that cap hit, why not? You're getting a guy who's on term for 5 years for your bottom six at $1.2 to $1.6 million a year. Yeah. Why not? That sounds great to me.
All right. I don't really remember someone with that long of a cap or not cap, but contract being moved.
Sure, that's possible. Like it's maybe teams are adverse to like, well, I don't want a guy that's going to be on my roster for the next forever. But it's not like they're no move. You can move these guys, and it's not like they carry such huge hits that you putting them in the minors doesn't help you. I guess it doesn't even matter if you put them in the minors. Who cares? It's $1.6 million. It's not that big of a deal. It's just cost certainty. Because if this guy does, for some reason, explode into a top four player, you've got him at $1.6 million a year.
I guess.
Like, and I get it. I don't think we're ever going to agree. No, we're not going to. We haven't agreed so far. We're not going to agree going forward. And I keep saying 1.6. Yes, I wanted to make sure that Pellick was indeed signed for 1.6, and it is. And Mayfield is at 1.45 starting next season.
Okay.
So, and there you go. And even then, Pellick, when he's done, RFA status still. He's still under team control after that.
So you can control a really mediocre player for a long time.
There you go. I sensed the sarcasm in there and I just went with it anyways.
I love you, Mitch.
Thank you.
All right, want to move on to the social segment?
Let's do it.
All right, so we had Kevin Connolly from Entourage dropping some very spicy hot Isles takes the other night during the game. He is definitely not a part of the Snow Must Go movement. In fact, might be the biggest Garth Snow fan I've ever seen. He was spin zoning things like crazy.
He was sipping the Kool-Aid, as they say.
He definitely was. I'm going to read a couple of them just because they're really, really funny. Let's see. First, he started with, guys, I hate to break it to you, but Garth and Doug Waite are not the problem. I do not, not in all capitals, support the movement.
The movement being the hashtag Snow Must Go.
Hashtag Snow Must Go.
But, like, really? Garth and Doug Waite? I can maybe see Doug. I could maybe understand that. Because we were saying it last year that Capuano wasn't really given a fair shake when it came to the roster. He had three players, important players, leave his roster, and they weren't replaced. Now, Doug Waite has come in, and he's made changes, and he's tried, and it doesn't seem to be working out. So I can hear the case for either side with Doug Waite, But Garza is definitely the problem. Can we, like, please now?
He hasn't drafted well, question mark. Sounds like you're all capitals on something, bruh.
Well, so this one I have a little bit of a problem with because I wrote something entirely based off that tweet. Because how do you quantify if a GM has drafted well?
If their players develop to be NHL players,
right.
I guess.
So, like, in based off of his first round picks, Garth Snow finishes 10th amongst all current general managers. Keep in mind, there are a number of GMs who've only been there for like a year, and there's some that don't even have GMs, like Carolina right now. So let's make the field down to like 25. He's mid table, so he's not bad, but he's not good. So. To the people who have been asking me to or asking us to apologize to Kevin Connolly for throwing him under the bus or trying to throw him under the bus on Twitter for this tweet, no. Garth has not been good. He's not been bad, but he has not been good either. You can not be both. Is that how you say it? I don't know how to say it.
The one that really got me was the one that I tweeted at him. I listed like Griffin Reinhart, Michael Delcol, and Nino Niederreiter. And he was like, what's your point? I'm like, oh, I don't know. They're top five picks who did nothing?
Yeah, like, that point should be pretty damn clear if you watch the Islanders or follow them. And I know he does, so I don't understand why he didn't get that. It's pretty clear when you say, in response to he's drafted well, question mark, sarcastically, and you say, what about these top five prospects that he's taken? And something else to note, there's only one other GM currently in the NHL who's had more top 10 picks than Garth Snow, and that's David Poile in Nashville, who's been there for 20 years at the helm of an expansion franchise. Garth Snow did not have an expansion team and has only been there 12 years. It's still a ridiculously long time, and there's no one else in the NHL that has more top 10 picks than him.
And this one, I wanted to just swan dive out my window when I read this one. No forward depth, question mark. That's ridiculous. I'm sorry, Mitch. What has been the problem all year long? Their first two lines score 300-something goals, and then the last two lines score like 90.
Yeah, it's...
That's a big difference.
It's a big drop-off. And obviously, the first line doesn't score like the fourth line, but... The problem we're seeing now is, especially when John Tavares went through that little slump, is that the secondary scoring went with it because the secondary scoring wasn't there to support him.
I mean, the third line's been garbage all year long.
Well, there was that 1 week where Brock Nelson scored like a million goals?
Yeah, but guess who was playing with him?
Well, no, I'm not talking about the start of the season. I'm talking just even like in February. So I think it's middle of February when the sun started coming out a little bit more.
Yeah, he's got to get that vitamin D. Well, I mean, daylight savings. You got to be thinking that Brock Nelson, better times are ahead.
Brock is going to be back, baby.
Except the only thing that doesn't work with that theory is he likes to go dark again during playoff time.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that it's based off of any sort of science or anything. It's really just observational. It's not a good theory.
I don't know.
It's not. I'll be honest, it's not a good theory. It's just...
It's a funny theory, though.
That's all. So yeah, do they have forward depth? No, not really. They got the Tavares, Lee, Bailey, Barzal, Eberle, and then that's it. Which, listen, that's five out of your top six. That's good, but your bottom six is garbage. So there's a problem.
Yes. That could all change next year, though.
Fingers crossed.
Bellows and Hosang.
We'll see.
Makes me happy.
Out of those two picks, which one makes the team? If one does, both. I don't think both do.
They'd be dumb to not have both.
Yeah, but they're
roster.
Already dumb, so we already know that. That's been established. They are already dumb.
Nope.
It's established.
Nope. Garth Snow is not going to be here next year, so
this
is going to be
fair
over
enough.
With.
Fair enough. Okay, I'll take you on that, but I don't think that's going to be the case. We'll see. That's all I had, buddy. It's the KOC thing or KCO thing just kind of blew my mind how he went bananas on social media. Almost.
And then deleted
it
all.
Two bananas. He went full Gwen Stefani on that. Is that too old of a reference for you?
No.
Okay, good.
Two bananas.
It's a great song. That was a great album.
B A-N-A-N-A.
That's right. That's how you spell bananas.
Banana. B-A-N-A. I'm a big No Doubt guy, so.
Well, yeah, fair enough. Do you know who produced that album? Andre 3000?
Okay.
Do you don't know who that is?
I know the name. I couldn't tell you what else
Outkast.
He did.
He's half of Outkast.
Oh, Outkast?
You don't know who Outkast is?
Okay. I know. Well, no, I know who Outkast is. Would you please?
It's going to be a whole show of this. Do you know who this person is? Oh. Anyways, I'm done. I'm done feeling old.
Oh, you can't work technology. I don't
what know. What does this button do? My bifocals aren't bifocaling. God, can we end this? I feel like I'm a million years old. My gray hair is just like doubled in numbers.
I think you're. It's just like falling out. You're going bald.
I am. It's true, but. Oh, no.
All right. All right. As always, be sure to follow Eyes on Isles on both Twitter and Facebook at Eyes on Isles FS on Twitter. Facebook is facebook.com/Eyes on Isles. My personal Twitter page is at Matt O'Leary NY. Mitch's is at TLO Mitch. And as always, please go to the website for all your New York Islanders needs. Mitch, Grandpa Mitch, it's been a good episode.
To be fair, only 7-year-olds call their Twitter handle a Twitter page. Please.
Oh, God. He's so salty.
I'm so old. I need to go to bed.
We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.